This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. How often do you go on Facebook? And how do you feel after you do? A new study from the University of Michigan offers some insights for us. As much as we seem to love checking our Facebook feeds, the result might not be what you'd expect. Ethan Cross is an associate professor of psychology, and he's with the Institute for Social Research at U of M. His findings were recently published in the Journal of Experimental Psychology. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
And Michigan Radio social media producer Kimberly Springer is back with us. Hey, Kim.
Hi, Cindy.
Ethan, this is not the first time that you have looked into the effect that Facebook has had on its users. So let's set the stage for your latest study by having you take us back to your 2013 research. And you did establish using Facebook doesn't necessarily make us happier.
That's right. What we did in that study was really our first attempt to see how does interacting with this really pervasive technology impact the way people feel from one moment to the next. What we did there in brief was we use this technology called experience sampling, which sounds really fancy but ends up being pretty simple. We text message people 5 times a day for 2 weeks on their smartphones, and each time we text message them, we ask them a series of very simple questions like, how do you feel right now? How much have you used Facebook since the last time we text messaged you? And so forth and so on. And what we found in that study, which was really interesting, was the more people used Facebook in between two text messages, the more their moods declined from one moment to the next. And that relationship held over a 2-week period. And it was really interesting. And the big question, of course, that it raised was, well, what about Facebook leads to these declines in emotions? And that was really the motivation for doing this second study, which we just published.
So what did you build the study around? How did you construct it? And really, what did you find?
We went into it with the idea that, inspired from lots of other research, is that there are two principal ways that people use this technology, and they're called passive and active forms of Facebook usage. The simple way to think about those different types of usage are passive Facebook usage is about consuming information, so scrolling down, looking at one's newsfeed, looking at other people's posts. Active Facebook use is about producing information on the website or the technology. So it's chatting, posting about how you're doing and so forth. And what we wanted to see was, is it the case that one type of usage, passive for example, maybe that's what's really harmful, because what you're doing if you're passively scrolling is you're continually seeing how good everyone else's life is, because people tend to post positive information on the website.
We all know we very carefully curate our online presence, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, you got it with that curating comment. We put a great deal of effort into how we portray ourselves on this technology. And the idea is, if you're constantly exposing yourself to, oh my goodness, look at how nice Sally and Joe's life is, 50, 60 years of social psychological research, classic research, would suggest that that has a very clear effect on how people are going to feel. It's going to lead you to feel bad. So we wanted to see whether that was the case. And the other thing we, of course, wanted to do is look to see whether being active on this site, communicating with others, exchanging information, does that have any benefit, as some research suggests that it might? We did two studies to look at those different questions. Before I jump into the findings, we did the study two different ways. First, we did a laboratory experiment in which we told people to either use it passively or actively. The reason I'm bringing that up is because laboratory experiments are the only way that you can actually draw causal inferences about this variable leads to a causal effect on another variable.
So you want the science to be good.
We want the science to be good. And then we, of course, did a second study in which we tried to see how these different processes unfold in life over time. What we found across the two studies was a remarkably similar pattern of results. The more you use Facebook passively, the worse you subsequently feel. Using Facebook actively, on the other hand, has no implications for how people feel from one moment to the next. It's totally benign in terms of its implications for people's mood.
Doesn't necessarily make you feel upbeat and happy. It just is.
It just is. Does not influence the way you feel. What's also really interesting is guess whether people use Facebook actively or passively.
That's what I'm wondering. Tell me.
They are significantly more likely to be using Facebook passively than actively. So most of the time that people are using this site, they're using it in what our research suggests could be a harmful way for people's moods.
That's interesting. Kimberly, you're a social media producer here, and your job is to get people to interact with the content. Does that surprise you to hear that more people tend to use it passively?
It does, actually. But maybe that's just because of the volume of comments that we have on our Facebook page, which is unusual for public radio sites. We have a lot of commenters, a lot of regulars who come to the page.
And we've certainly seen here on Stateside, we have gotten much more traction and visibility when we post stories on Facebook and people can get involved. So perhaps our listeners are more of a rarefied group. But I'm wondering, we all have seen it. I have done it. You get a few extra minutes with nothing going on. Out comes a smartphone. On I go to Facebook. And I know I'm not alone. Why are we, Kimberly, so drawn to something that apparently is making us not feel good?
I think, was it Louis C.K., the comedian who had a bit of a tirade on one of the late night talk shows about how we just can't be bored anymore. We just have no tolerance for being bored anymore. And so it's very easy to pick up your phone and just start browsing through something that, you know, they call it a stream online. Mm-hmm. So just to let that stream kind of wash over you. So that's why I find this research really interesting, too.
And I think this question that you're raising is a really interesting one that we don't have the answer to yet. We ask our participants, why do you use Facebook? And there are lots of different motivations. Some people want to kill time. Some people want to stay in touch with others. Some people want to see what's going on. We know from other areas of research, though, that people have a really difficult time just being alone with their thoughts. A study that got a lot of attention showing that if you put people in a room and just have them sit for 5 or 10 minutes, they feel incredibly uncomfortable. Think about sitting at a restaurant waiting for your date to arrive. Out comes a smartphone. Now, I want to be very clear. I do not think that smartphones or online social networks are inherently bad for you. The challenge in all of this and what makes us so exciting for us as researchers is that we're seeing a tremendous shift in the way human beings interact, right? We've been interacting with other people for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do in our research is figure out what are the adaptive versus maladaptive, helpful or harmful ways of interacting with this technology? The technology is here to stay, and for good reason. It can do lots of fantastic things. What we see is that the natural way that people interact with it, passively, tends to be harmful. But knowing that in and of itself is an important, I think, clue for cueing people how to harness this technology in more adaptive ways to improve their lives if they want to.
I have seen the phrase social snacking as we are checking out that network of friends and their posts and their photos. Is social snacking a good thing or no?
Well, if we were to extrapolate from our study, the answer is it depends on how you do it.
How you're snacking.
How you're snacking. Are you pinging your buddy to say, hey, what are you doing right now?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That shouldn't undermine the way you feel according to our results. But if you're tracking their vacation in Bora Bora and thinking, oh my goodness, that looks so great, and I'm stuck here in negative 20 degrees in Ann Arbor,
yeah,
might not be so good.
Now, Kimberly, your job is to understand what makes something shareable and what kind of enlivens things and gets people switching from passive to active. What do you see?
It seems like the things that get people to share that make them feel good are history or nostalgia. So they can tap into their own memories about it and talk about when they were there or their parents were
TBTs,
there.
TBTs, those Throwback Thursdays, are huge on Facebook.
Exactly.
Drag out the picture of myself in my, you know, toddler dress. And people seem to love that.
and there is data showing that if you ask a person to just review their own pictures and profile, that can have mood-enhancing effects.
Mm.
What we assume based on our data, though, is that most of the time that people are on Facebook and using it passively, they're not looking at all of their previous photos. They're looking at other people's information. So you can get really fine grain in trying to figure out what are the different patterns of these interactions that have up or down regulatory effects on people.
What else besides history?
Well, I just got some ideas for our Facebook page. But besides history, also videos. This weekend we had a video of someone skating on Lake Michigan, and that just went viral for us because people were interested in the vantage point of this person doing something unusual.
So you got to push the button. And then when people are engaged, what we find from your research, Ethan, is yes, they are feeling not necessarily better, but they're not feeling bad.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next question?
How do clinically depressed individuals, for example, differ in how they use this technology compared to healthy individuals? And the hope in doing some of this work is to identify ways that we can actually harness this technology to actually improve people's conditions, right? So we've now figured out, well, here's a specific way of interacting with it that leads you to feel bad. How can we identify ways of boosting the way people feel, and particularly vulnerable individuals?
So as we've made very clear, this technology, Twitter and Facebook, and this, none of this is going anywhere. So we're not going to be at a point of saying, gee, shouldn't we close down our Facebook accounts and actually look each other in the face and actually talk, because
it's here to stay.
In the same way that interacting with people in daily life is here to stay and has been here since the dawn of people. It's really about identifying the dynamics and how does it all work? How do these interactions work online?
Fascinating stuff. Kimberly Springer, Michigan Radio social media producer, and Ethan Cross, U of M Institute for Social Research. Thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.